And where were the standby alert battle planes? Out in the weather. And where were the tanks? Snug and rusting in the underground tank park. And where were the reserves at other mine sites? Pulled in here. Damn, Turl. There was no fuel cartridge or ammunition supply inside the compound. Zut was illogical in blaming Turl for this, since it was against company rules to store them inside a compound. They were nearly a half mile from here, and two parties of cyclos that had tried to get to the dump had been slaughtered. That was another thing that proved it was Tallneps. The cyclos who had been hit simply exploded into a pale green flash. Only Tallneps could invent weapons like that. So he had to scavenge in the old planes and ground cars for half-used cartridges and ammunition charges. Oh, there was quite a bit to be found, but it couldn't be depended on. He had come to physical blows with the two Chamko brothers, blast them. They were readying up a heavy armored tank. Two tanks that had gotten out that violent afternoon had been blown to cinders. So the Chamkos were rigging one of the old brutes of the Basher class. Bash our way to glory. Nothing could penetrate its hide, and its guns wrecked things for miles. The Chamkos were salvaging fuel and ammunition cartridges for it, and they had the nerve, the twisted metal nerve, to maintain that the attackers were Hockners from Duralab, a system Cyclo had completely whipped 200 years ago. The battle had been over who got the cartridges, and that pompous midget Care had come down and given them both half. Another Turl mess. The cartridges didn't fit the Mark 32. Zut had spent valuable time machining a false case around them to get them into the tubes. Damn Turl. He had told his men to move that damn drone 2 hours ago. Damn Turl. Now, here he was. He had found a co-pilot, one of the executives in the draft that had just arrived, rated combat on a Mark 32, named Nup, a dimwit, but that's what you got on an out-of-the-way planet like this, who thought it was a typical bull-bod attack, based on a rumor he had heard in the Kerbango shops lately in the Imperial City that a conquest of the bull-bods was intended. Zut had collected a combat breathe mask, gotten a shoulder bag of extra vials, gotten his sidearms, put spare rations in his pocket, and last but not least put his favorite wrench into the side of his boot. A wrench that sometimes came in handy in any kind of fight or situation. The Mark 32 motors turned over easily. It purred. In no time at all, he would be out there, and that would be the very positive end of this attack. Damn, Turl. Zut let off the skid grips and taxied the Mark 32, hit 'em low, kill 'em, toward the firing door. Mechanics leaped to get out of his way. The place was in a turmoil of cyclos trying to get planes ready with nothing, and that damned drone was still standing there. Ordinarily, you could fire 3 planes at once through that door. It was high enough even to add a fourth, but that ancient relic of a gas drone was so wide and so tall it was blocking the whole door. Just what he told Turl. Damn, Turl! There was no way he could get the Mark 32 past it. Zut leaned out the door and screamed for the shift foreman. He came rushing up. Zut almost bit him. Move that damn drone. 2 hours ago, I...
It won't dolly, panted the foreman.
He pointed. 4 dolly trucks had been trying to push it away.
It won't move.
Zut gave his equipment bag a hoist onto his shoulder and sprang down.
You imbecile crunch. The only inside control that thing has... is its mag grapnels. Why haven't you let it off? Those big skis are magnetically locked to this platform. Why don't you learn...
It's a very old drone, chattered the foreman, his wits starting to crumble under Zut's glare.
Zut rushed to the door of the drone. It was a huge door, big enough to load 12 gas canisters at a time. Somebody had put a rolling ladder there and Zut ran up it, his equipment clattering, and pried at the door. It was locked. An armored door itself the size of a plane.
Where's the key? Screamed Zut.
Turl had it, the foreman shouted up at him. We've looked everywhere for Turl. We can't find him.
Damn, Turl. Have you searched his rooms? Zut yelled down from the rolling ladder.
Yes, 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 cried the foreman. We... At that moment, a higher-pitched voice bit into the row of the hangar.
Yoo-hoo!
It was Chirk. Zut stared in daggers of hostility, the cheap twit. But she was holding a single huge key.
I found this in his desk,
she caroled.
Where are the other keys to this thing? Shouted Zut. The preset box keys.
That's the only one there was in the desk,
lilted Chirk. It gave Zut an instant's pause. He didn't want this damned old relic firing itself off in the hangar with no way to get out. But he had to move it. This was the door key they were passing up to him. He glared at the key. Three toggles, pitted, the shaft almost in two. Turl could at least have made a new key, but oh no, it was paws off. He shoved the key, all 20 pounds of it, at the lock hole. He twisted it with a curse. Damn, Turl. The rusty magnetic clenchers gave. The key fell apart. Zut flung it to the platform below, narrowly missing Chirk. At least the door was open. He struggled to swing it back. Even the hinges were decayed and stiff. It opened to reveal the enormous interior. Zut got a torch. There were no lights in this thing. It was never meant to have a pilot in it. It was just tons and tons and tons of gas canisters, engines, and armor. He thought belatedly he might have robbed some fuel from it. Too late now. He lumbered forward to the control compartment. He had better throw them off. But no, they were armor-locked solid. They couldn't be unset without a key. And this metal wouldn't surrender to anything. It was armored. Damn Turl. He darted his light around. There was the magnetic grip release, the only interior control, put there so hangar and firing people could lock and unlock it when moving it about with tractors. Zut reached for the release brake. Before he could touch it, it moved. He froze, looking at it in horror. Yes, there was a click in the preset box. He dove for the door. The forward jerk of the motors threw him off his feet. He scrambled for the exit. Too late. The hangar door was fleeing by. It was already yards down to the ground. He didn't dare jump. The drone took off, its rusty side door flapping in the wind. Zut let out a shuddering groan. Damn, Turl. Well, at least they could get the battle planes out and end the Talnep attack. And all this on half pay and no bonuses. Probably that was Turl's doing, too. 8. Johnny, 20 miles away, saw the drone launch. It was a huge thing. The gas drone? He went ice cold. The flash of an explosion bloomed on the side of it. He knew it would be a bazooka firing. There was a team there to prevent the launching of planes. A second flash against the hull as the boom of the first one drifted faintly to them. Neither had the slightest effect upon the drone. It rose in stately massiveness to 2,000 feet as it turned. Still climbing, it headed northwest. It went by them to the east, looming in the sky, so big it looked close even though 2 miles away. It was ragged and patched and dented, evidences of former combat on its discolored hide. A tense Johnny clocked it at about 300 miles an hour. A battle plane had fired just behind it. Bazooka missiles hit the plane, exploded in 2 flares of light. It continued sedately on its way, following the drone. As it passed over them, he saw it was a different type of battle plane. The Cyclo numbers 32 were on its side, and then the smoke logos of the Cyclos. An escort? The heavy roars beat at the earth. When they had gone, Turl said, "Why not admit it, animal? You're licked. When the Cyclos counterattack from home planet, you'll already be gone. So why not toss that gun over here and we can make a deal?" Johnny ignored him. He was carefully tracking the compass course of the drone, relating it to the afternoon sun. He watched it as long as he could as it droned away to the northeast. It was not turning further. "Be calm," he told himself. "Don't panic." "Where's it going first?" he said to Turl.
A battle plane could do 2,000 miles an hour. You can catch it. Be calm.
Throw the gun over and I'll tell you all about it, said Turl.
Turl's motions alarmed Patty.
Don't believe anything he says, she pleaded. He promised us food and didn't bring it. He even made out to us 2 or 3 times that you were dead.
You'll tell me about it, said Johnny, or I'll start shooting off your feet. He aimed his gun.
Do it, said Patty. He's a nasty old brute, a devil.
Johnny was glancing in the direction Chrissy had gone. She was taking an awful long time coming back. He couldn't leave the girls out here alone, and certainly not with Turl alive.
Be calm, he told himself. You can catch up with it. All right, said Turl, as though resigned. I'll give you the places it's going.
In proper order, said Johnny, raising the gun suggestively.
You'd get a kick out of shooting me up, wouldn't you?
Said Turl. I don't get any enjoyment out of hurting things the way...
That's because you're a rat brain,
laughed Turl. All this cyclo talk between Johnny and Turl was making Patty very nervous.
Don't listen to him, Johnny. Just shoot him,
she demanded, grabbing Johnny's gun arm.
All right, said Turl. Its first target is the bottom of Africa. The next is China. The next is Russia. Then it is preset to fly to Italy, and then right here.
Good, thought Johnny. He didn't mention Scotland. It's heading over the Arctic on that course.
Scotland. That's its first target.
And it would be because the cyclos couldn't get up there, or thought they couldn't.
Thank you, Turl.
Good, he said aloud. For information received, you live a while longer. It would take it 17 hours to get to Scotland.
Look calm. You can catch it.
Chrissy was coming down. They had been hidden by a dip in the plains. The horse was at a walk. And he saw why as she came near. It was Thor. She was holding him upright in front of her on the horse. She had removed her buckskin jacket and used it for bandages. Thor's anti-radiation suit was stained with blood around the left shoulder. She had torn it away there and used buckskin and grass to staunch the blood flow. Thor's left arm was broken, bound in rough sticks for splints. It was he who had been shot out of the sky when he was using the jetpack. With Chrissy's help, Thor slid off the horse. He was gray from blood loss and stood unsteadily. He looked at Johnny ruefully.
I'm sorry, Johnny.
It was my fault, not yours, said Johnny. Ease him down on that rock, Chrissy. Thor looked at Turl. He had seen the monster close up only a couple of times. Thor was wearing a .457 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver from the old base arsenal, loaded with radiation bullets. He suddenly recognized Turl and grabbed for his gun to shoot him. No, no, said Johnny. Keep the gun drawn and train it on him and shoot him the moment he looks like he's going to move, particularly his hands. Can you sit there okay? Thor was about 50 feet from Turl. He eased down further and got the gun trained on Turl.
Now, Turl, said Johnny, that gun he is holding can put a hole in you a horse could drive through. It has special explosive bullets, worse than your own blast gun. Got it? Be calm in front of these people. You can catch up with it.
He turned to Patty. He gave her the huge blast pistol to hold. He showed her where the trigger was, and she determinedly walked back up a rock so she could support the gun with it.
I point it like this?
And keep it on him. You have time, he told himself. Do a good job here.
Why not kill him? Said Thor.
He leaks information, said Johnny. Turl couldn't understand what they were saying, but he got their drift. Johnny took out a knife and, keeping out of the line of possible fire, made Turl swivel around. He inserted the knife at Turl's collar and cut the cloth down the back. He went around front, watching Turl's eyes for a telltale clench, signaling action, and pulled the coat sleeves off. He ripped the cloth down the side of each of Turl's legs. He darted a shallow stab at Turl when he sought to spring. Turl subsided. Johnny got Turl's boots and pants off. He took his watch, he took his cap.
The only thing Turl had left was his breathe mask, and Johnny even took the emergency vials off that. Turl glared. There he sat, his fur matted with sweat, his claws twitching to rake Johnny. Johnny took the belt and made Turl put his paws behind him and clinched the belt as tight as he could around the wrists. Then he took old Pork's bridle and tied the wrists and belt, and then passed the rope under the mask tube. He cinched it up. If Turl tried to wrestle his wrists loose, he would choke himself. "Do a good job," Johnny told himself. "Don't panic. In a battle plane, you can catch the drone." He had been working very fast. He now stepped away from Turl and quickly went through the clothes. Sure enough, Turl had two more weapons secreted. A knife and a second assassin gun. Johnny fired a round with the assassin gun. It was silent. The bush he aimed at began to burn. He gave the light gun to Patty and took the belt gun back.
"Let me shoot him now," said Patty.
Thor said to Turl in Cyclo, "The little girl over there is begging to shoot you."
"I'll be quiet here," said Turl.
"Don't go near him. Light a fire from that wreck over here to the side, Chrissy, so that Thor stays warm and you can see this area." He turned to Thor. "Who was with you?"
"Glenn Cannon," said Thor. "He's over there in the hills somewhere. I think he tried to get closer to the base. I tried to reach him on this mine radio twice. He's got one, but he doesn't answer. They've only got a 5-mile range."
He looked curious.
"Where are you going?"
At that moment, there was an explosion flash at the compound. A battle plane had come out of the hangar and apparently been hit with a bazooka. It soared in a flame ball and crashed at the sound of the bazooka, and then the plane explosion reached them. A second battle plane came out and met the same fate.
"See," said Johnny, "I'll send back a mine car for you." "Be calm. At 2,000 miles an hour, you can catch that drone."
The girls looked numbly at Johnny.
But what could he do?
He had meant to send them all to the Academy base, but Thor was in no shape to travel at all.
Why not kill Turl?
No, that would solve nothing. Sound calm to these people. The speed of the drone was 302 miles an hour, he remembered from the messages he had taken from the hand of a president 1,000 years dead. A battle plane could go hypersonic at 2,000 miles an hour. Even if it were halfway to Scotland, he could catch it hours before it arrived. He swung up on Dancer. The base was about 20 miles away. Make it an hour or so of hard riding.
"He can still make a deal, animal," said Turl. "If you sent uranium to Cyclo, you're really messed up. It's been tried before. They have a force field around their receipt platform, and if any uranium flashes on Cyclo, that force field triggers solid to enclose their whole platform. The flashback occurs at the sending point, just like you saw today. Cyclo will be attacking this place, animal. You'll need me to mediate."
Johnny looked at him. He raised his hand in farewell to the girls and Thor and thumped a heel into Dancer, and she streaked off through the declining sunlight. Ahead of him pulsed and flickered the battle at the compound. He had wasted time. He could not have done anything else.
"Be calm," he told himself. "Don't panic. A battle plane could catch that drone."
As he raced across the plain, he put out of his mind a thought that kept crowding in. Not all the armed forces of the United States in its days of power had been able to do anything at all to that gas drone. Not with planes, missiles, atomic bombs, or even suicide crashes.
"You have time. You can catch up with it. Don't panic.